Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Good morning. This is hour two for the 19th of November. If you missed a bit on hour one, you missed Brandon Showalter, the Christian Post, talking about some of the headlines out of Saudi Arabia and the killing of the journalist Khashoggi there, as well as Adam Carrington commenting quite a bit on the legalities between the press and our country and the president. It was a great first hour. You can go to myfaithradio.com and catch all of what they had to say for that. And coming up here in hour two, we're going to be joined by Kim Cotola in just a moment from Cradle My Heart Ministry. And we're going to talk a lot about some of the different headlines that are coming out in our country related to some of the abortion votes in different states and the implications that that might have for us as a people in our country moving forward. So stay tuned for Kim here next. But a couple of headlines worth noting from this morning. We see that more than 2,000 Jewish stars are hanging in Pittsburgh. The stars were hung by dozens of volunteers on Saturday. They were handmade stars of crochet or leather by 1,000 volunteers from around the world. The stars of David with a heart in the center were the idea of two women who created the Facebook page, Jewish Hearts from Pittsburgh, as a response to the deadly attack on the Tree of Life Synagogue last month. So good to see in the midst of that difficulty some solidarity among people to come around and try to carve out a different way of life in the midst of that. Noted with interest, too, that author and radio show host Dave Ramsey, many of you know him from Financial Matters and what he speaks into relative to a financial philosophy of health. And he is asking pastors to stop telling people who are, quote, broke to tithe. The author of Financial Peace University says religious leaders should stop calling on some people to give to the church until they work on their debt and budgeting. He said Christians should first be taught to get on a budget before giving to the church, and says it's natural for those who love Jesus to give when they have the money. So pretty interesting news coming from Financial Peace University. I know that when I come back from vacation in a week or so, that we'll have Robert Dickey join us on the program. He's a financial advisor. I'll get his perspective on tithing as well. So this again is Faith Radio Morning for the 19th of November. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Kim Cotola of Cradle My Heart Ministry. About 8 minutes past the hour. I'm your host for the show here on Faith Radio Mornings, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and that is the music of Kim Cotola. And I know many of you listening know her voice from a variety of contributions to Faith Radio over all these years. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Happy Thanksgiving week. Do you have any big plans for the week moving forward here in terms of celebrating Thanksgiving?
Yeah, we'll be visiting with my sister who has two puppies, and it'll be just my husband and me with sis. And so I'm looking forward to that. I think we have four grown adult kids and six grandkids, but I think we'll be making those rounds next month. Thanksgiving's going to be relatively quiet.
It sounds pretty peaceful at that point. I know I've asked a few of the guests here in the last week or so, what makes Thanksgiving Day table Thanksgiving from a food standpoint? Kim, is there one thing that you say has to be on the table for it to be Thanksgiving?
Yeah, I have to have the cranberry sauce, and it's very simple. It's not jellied from a can or anything. You make it with orange juice, orange rind, and a bunch of sugar and fresh cranberries. And you just put them all in the food processor and leave it overnight, and it's the most wonderful thing ever.
Oh man, the next day when you when you throw that on the turkey the next day for a leftover turkey sandwich, it's, you know, Thanksgiving all over again.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're at Cradle My Heart Ministry. I know many of our listeners know you from the many years with Faith Radio and ministry. Give us a little update on what's happening within your ministry.
Well, we made a decision this last year because of the grandchildren situation, and one of our grandkids has Down syndrome, special needs. And so I pitched in with the help of care. He's also a twin. So I pitched in with his care and with the care of the other kids in that family. And I wasn't able to continue producing our media on the same level and do that. And so We've been asking ourselves, you know, what God would have us do with the ministry going forward. And right now we're still paused on all production of media. I had a very busy speaking schedule in the fall, so I still do a lot of fundraising for pro-life pregnancy centers and other organizations, and love to do training on pro-life apologetics in high schools and colleges, and did quite a bit of that also this fall. And so I think that's probably what the ministry is going to look like in the coming year. I'm not sure if God would have us resume the media production or not, but at this point it looks as though that's not going to be in the mix.
Well, and certainly you have stayed updated on all of the headlines coming out of sort of the pro-life and pro-choice controversy in our country. And from a pro-life, pro-choice standpoint, we see that Planned Parenthood spent a lot of money in these most recent midterms, didn't they?
Yeah, and I mean, that, you're right, Peter. I'm committed to the cause of life, and I do still see it as the preeminent moral crisis of our time. And so I think it's incumbent on all of us to do something and to be part of the solution, part of the answer to this problem that's been vexing our country for over 40 years, and also, of course, taking the lives of the youngest members of the American family, the children before their births. And Planned Parenthood is the big player. We talk about them a lot, but they're the big player, and they have changed the face of the abortion movement, if you will. There's an abortion rights movement that's been very active in our country for, again, since Roe v. Wade was ruled by the Supreme Court to give women a constitutional right to abortion. And Planned Parenthood is now, very frankly, you know, a political organization. They lobby and spend money on candidates and elections and races, and $30 million was their contribution to getting, you know, pro-abortion candidates elected in the midterm cycle that we just completed. And that's why it's the point of this, the reason why that matters, is that they're also the recipient of a lot of government funding for what little health care they still do. They're seeing fewer patients for fewer procedures, and yet they still keep getting gobs and gobs of federal money. And so the point is, you know, President Trump, during the 2016 elections, and others who were voted into the Senate at that time, you know, pledged that they were going to stop that gravy train, that they were not going to fund Planned Parenthood, and they haven't been able to get it done. Rand Paul and others were very vocal about the failure to defund Planned Parenthood and the failure to act on that promise when we had the majority and the possibility of doing it. And so it'd be really interesting to see if that promise is forgotten as we move forward into now the next cycle. It's always the next cycle, right? The 2020 elections. But that should be our goal as we are interacting with our elected representatives, to let them know that from a personal viewpoint, we don't support this. We don't support our tax dollars going to fund abortion or to fund Planned Parenthood interfering with elections. They're doing it legally, so maybe interfering, you might object to my use of that term, but they're absolutely influencing the outcome of elections so that abortion remains legal. And if you're not in favor of that, and if you're not in favor of your tax dollars going for that, I hope that you'll raise your voice with your elected representatives and see that maybe we can get that done.
Well, and certainly it's interesting with Planned Parenthood, Kim, because do they face not just a battle of morality these days, but a battle of science a bit more? I know when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s, the term viability relative to embryo in the womb or fetus in the womb would have been maybe at 30 weeks, 32 weeks, 34 weeks, something like that. But as viability has been pushed back and back and back, is there a sense in which Planned Parenthood has a bit of a losing battle here against science?
Well, I think so. But I also think that viability was a somewhat arbitrary point at which the Supreme Court conferred value on the unborn child. Science, Peter has told us, it's not in dispute. Over 20 embryology textbooks agree life begins at conception. This is not controversial. And so the question then is, well, when does life begin to have value? And the Supreme Court decided that when that life can live outside of his or her mother's womb was when we should begin to value them as citizens and give them some sort of legal protections under the law. It was an arbitrary measure, though, because if life begins at conception, then it should have value at that point, right? It's our shared human nature which gives us value, not our development. If a development conferred value, Peter, then, you know, teenagers would be worth more than toddlers. We know that's not true.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
absolutely.
The 2-month-old will be worth more than the newborn as a further developed baby or child. And so it's not development. It was an arbitrary measure to talk about viability. But if you want to use viability, you're right. That standard is ever changing. And children as young as 22 weeks of gestation have survived outside the mother's womb. The cases are rare, but they have happened. And so, and it's interesting that in those cases, of course, heroic life-saving measures are put in place and teams gather and assemble and work tirelessly to see that these babies are nurtured and can grow. Whereas, you know, in some facilities, babies that same age can be willfully destroyed legally in our country. And we have to resolve this. We really do. And I think that science, I don't know if science persuades. I mean, you know, God's word tells us that it's our hearts that drives our actions. And we have to, you know, pray that the hearts of everybody would be opened. The eyes of the heart would be opened. The eyes of the heart, as the word calls it, the eyes of our hearts would be opened to see the value of life before birth. Because, you know, in the spiritual battle, many, many have been blinded as to the true humanity of children before they're born. And then, of course, their true value.
I'm talking with Kim Cotola, Cradle My Heart, and about Planned Parenthood and just issues on viability in life and how we understand some of these terms. And Kim, I saw that there was a pretty disturbing ad that Planned Parenthood has come out with. And is this just even part of sort of the ongoing revealing of what has been underpinning that movement for quite some time?
It's the most inadvertently pro-life ad you've ever seen. It was making the rounds on Twitter not long ago. And it's actually, I think, been out there for a while, maybe as long as since 2015. But it shows a close-up of a cooing, happy baby, you know, looking like she's ready for her close-up, right? It's just an adorable baby, wide-eyed and happy. And by the way, AmericanThinker.com has a piece on this if you want to find it and see the ad. And so you see the baby cooing directly to the camera, and then you see a slide that says, "She deserves to be loved." More pictures of cooing baby. "She deserves to be wanted," the text reads. More cooing baby, and then it says, "She deserves to be a choice." And then the final, you know, point that they try to make is hashtag stand with Planned Parenthood. Wait a minute. Everyone who has been discussing this on Twitter and elsewhere has said she deserves to live. Even if she's not loved, even if she's not wanted, even if she's not a choice, she deserves to live. And the idea that you would sell abortion with images of a happy cooing baby is so unhinged, isn't it? I mean, I don't even know how you characterize that. The thing that they usually don't want us to think about is the reality that every abortion involves a baby, you know, a young one, a fetus, which just is Latin for little one. Every abortion involves a human being with a heartbeat. And, I think it has backfired upon them. And I don't know if it's changing any minds of people, you know, who think that abortion should be a woman's legal right. Many of them now concede, Peter, that, okay, it's a life, but a woman's life is more important.
Well, it certainly speaks to some degree to some potential beginning stages of desperation that they're beginning to lose the narrative in terms of what constitutes life and the value of life in our country. And we're seeing that in some legal cases as well, Kim. And when we come back from break, we'd love to get your perspective on what's happened with the heartbeat bill in Ohio, as well as a potential ban of very young forms of abortion happening in Kentucky. So we'll have more with Kim Cotola from Cradle My Heart Ministry here on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here at about 21 minutes past the hour on the 19th of November. I'm Peter Kapsner chatting with Kim Cotola this morning about issues of pro-life and pro-choice and how we understand the value of life in our country and some of the changes that seem to be afoot and happening. And Kim, do we see some potential changes in terms of the reaffirmation of the Ohio heartbeat bill in terms of what we can expect in terms of maybe putting some restrictions on abortion?
Well, lawmakers passed a bill that said abortion should not be allowed after you can detect a heartbeat, which is now possible at 6 weeks gestation. This happened back in, I think, 2016. Yes. And at the time, Governor Kasich vetoed the bill, saying it wouldn't stand up to a legal challenge because of Roe v. Wade at the Supreme Court level. But Ohio lawmakers have now reintroduced it, and it passed the House last week, I think, was the report, November 15th. And they're moving forward with it. And in this case, the Senate would have enough votes, if it passes the Senate, that they wouldn't have to worry about a veto from Governor Kasich. And, you know, some have said, State Representative Candace Keller said, you know, look, in Roe v. Wade, you have a ruling that's not really supported in the Constitution. She said there's not a word about abortion in the Constitution. And a heartbeat bill could save 20,000 children per year in Ohio. And so that's where, you know, they're aiming to get this done. It would be a true life-saving measure. Of course, the opposition, Peter, where do they go? It's my body. You can't tell me what to do with my body. But that's a myth, first of all. This government often tells us what we can and can't do with our bodies when other bodies and other people are involved. Mm-hmm. And further, I would call women to a higher standard than to say, it's my body, it's my right to do whatever I want with it. I would call you to say, don't you have a greater responsibility when the life of another human being is involved in your body? You know, I would really want to inspire women that although this law may exist, it's not a good law, it's not a moral law, and it's not a kind law to the youngest members of the human family. And so I think in Ohio we have, you know, we have a determined group of lawmakers who are making another run at this, and it'll be really interesting to see where it goes. Many states are putting laws in place because they believe, Peter, that if Roe v. Wade is overturned, the decisions about the legality of abortion would go back to the states, which is something that President Trump predicted when talking about where he stood on the issue before he was elected, that it should be a matter of states' rights, and the states should have the opportunity to judge as they see fit what will happen with their citizens on this. And then, of course, you know, I mean, we would have the opportunity to live in a state that does or does not permit abortion. Alabama is passed their Amendment 2, which would grant personhood rights, if you will, to children before they're born. And, you know, it won't eliminate all abortions, of course, to take it to the states. I don't think anything will ever fully eliminate abortion. But we, as people of God, need to be working on drying up that demand and helping women to make a better choice and helping women with the support that they need so that they can do that.
Well, and certainly that those two things go hand in hand, don't they, in terms of the education of what's happening as well as some of the legal precedents. And pretty big and important case happening down in Kentucky right now challenging the ban of abortion known as dilation and evacuation. So tell us about what's happening there as well.
Well, if you're not aware of what that is as a listener of this program, I am sorry that it's, you know, something that's very, very gruesome. And what it is an abortion procedure, which is the most common procedure after the first trimester is completed. So any abortion after 14 weeks involves dilating a woman's cervix and pulling the child out piece by piece. That's what that evacuation or extraction method is. They use forceps. And they pull the baby from the womb prematurely. And the only way to do that is with force. And, of course, the young bodies aren't meant to withstand that force. And they come apart piece by piece. And it's a barbaric procedure. And the abortion industry, you know, argues that it's a safe procedure for the woman, of course. They say it's safe for the woman, which and that's an open question as well. Of course, you know, how can you so violently disrupt a natural process of the human body and call it safe for any of the parties involved with it? But in Kentucky, they're moving to ban that. And lawyers for the ACLU, representing the state's only abortion business, are challenging that as an unconstitutional barrier for women seeking abortions after the 14th week of pregnancy. Because, you see, the only other way to bring about a fetal demise, which is medical speak for killing the baby, is to inject poison directly to the child's heart, digoxin. And that's trickier and requires more skill, and fewer doctors are willing to risk it. So D&E is the preferred method because it's easier for them and potentially has fewer side effects than the injection. So we'll see what happens in Kentucky, because that trial has started last week in Louisville. And, states that are enacting these measures have had great success. In some cases, they've been overturned, as happened with Texas when they tried to regulate clinics. But many, many of the abortion businesses that didn't meet basic medical standards also were closed down in the course of that, you know, the court battle that ensued after that legislation was passed in 2015 in Texas. So it's all, you know, I'm glad that there are those who are waging this battle at the level of politics, Bill. I mean, Peter, it's not my expertise whatsoever, but I'm grateful, and they need our prayers because it truly is a fight for life.
Well, we love having your voice in the program and just working through the morality of it, the ways we can pray around it, and just staying updated on the legal situations in our country. So, Kim, have a great Thanksgiving, and thanks for joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Thanks for the chance, Peter. Happy Thanksgiving to you, too.
We'll take a break here for Breakpoint and Bottom of the Hour News. When we come back for the last part of our show this morning, I'll be joined by Dr. David Aikman, and we'll cover some of the headlines out of the global situation, including Brexit and whether England and Scotland and Ireland are actually going to leave the European Union. So I see some news out of Wisconsin that a Madison entrepreneur is celebrating a new investment in her company. Kate Field runs the Kombucha Shop and Home Brewing Supply Company, and last night she took a deal with two of the sharks on the popular show Shark Tank. She gave up 10% of her company for $200,000 in cash and a $150,000 line of credit. Field opened her store 5 years ago to sell supplies people can use to make their own kombucha at home. I suppose it is helpful for our digestive enzymes and all of that, but I can't imagine the flavor coming out of homebrew when I know the ones from the stores are dicey at best. Last Friday here on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Carmen LaBerge, the host of Connecting Faith, and she was talking about how the church can shine light in this world in the face of all of the sexual misconduct that seems to be happening.
I think that we need to continually look to Jesus, who's the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. He is the head of the church. The church is his body. And we need to be looking to him, and we need to be comparing the church experience that we're having wherever we are in the world today. We need to be looking at the church, and we need to be saying, how is this the body of Christ, and how is Jesus the head of it? And in any way that it is not the body of Christ, every member understood as an essential component part, working together to advance the kingdom purposes in this generation. Any way that it's not functioning in that way, it's dysfunctional. And in any way that Jesus is not the head of the body, then the body has replaced its head. And that's not okay if you've replaced it by an individual, and you're dealing with narcissistic bullying or individual sexual sin, or things that are hidden because of the person at the top, or because you are governed by this secret magisterium from Rome.
I always appreciate Carmen's voice in the program. You can catch all of what she had to say last Friday in the show if you go to myfaithradio.com. Well, I see that Dr. David Aikman is already on the line. We have lots to cover from a global perspective this morning. I'll ask David first about what seems to be a bit of meltdown going on within the English Parliament relative to the Brexit situation and the implications that will have moving forward.
As a parent, you set rules in your home for good reason. Most likely, they focus on things like honesty, obedience, and respect for others. But what happens when your teen blows right through all the rules? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Rules are guidelines that are placed around behavior so that families operate within their personal belief system. But all the rules you put in place doesn't make a difference if there aren't consequences to back them up. It's the consequences that'll teach your children to learn right from wrong and move from selfish to unselfish behavior. That's what you're aiming for as a parent, right? So don't keel when the pressure's on. follow through, as needed, with the consequences.
Want more help from Mark Gregston? Find books and other resources online at parentingtodaysteens.org. That's parentingtodaysteens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
And that, of course, is the voice of Dr. David Aikman, who joins us every Monday on Faith Radio Mornings to talk about some of the headlines around the world. And, David, I'm just going to go ahead and assume, and correct me if I'm wrong in my British history, but you will not be celebrating Thanksgiving this week.
That's right. We don't celebrate Thanksgiving, which I think is a great shame, because some of the origins of Thanksgiving go back to the celebration of harvest festivals in past centuries, and we just don't have the equivalent of Thanksgiving in the U.S., which I think is a shame.
Well, it certainly is fun to connect some of those traditions to our longstanding faith traditions. They bind us together in ways that sometimes our differences among countries don't. And clearly there's some differences happening among civil leaders and political leaders in the United Kingdom right now relative to Brexit. Are we getting ever closer to a hard Brexit where you sort of crash out of the European Union?
I don't think so. I mean, that's the worst-case scenario, and everybody, business leaders, labor union leaders, and everybody else is really despairing at the prospect of a hard Brexit, where the UK actually does crash out. I think Theresa May is in a fairly strong position, even though some of her own cabinet and some of her own party have written a letter questioning whether they have confidence in her leadership. That's a measure that requires 48 letters requesting a change. And apparently that number hasn't been reached. The reason it hasn't is most of the Conservatives realize that if they have a change in leadership and they get rid of Theresa May, chances are that the Labour Party may insist on a general election, and that would be a catastrophic situation for the Conservative Party, and also would be catastrophic for the whole process of exiting the European Union. So she is holding on to the prospect that the EU basically agrees with the terms that she has laid out, and that they laid out, and they negotiated together. And they want to see this thing through because they don't want any more uncertainty.
Well, and certainly if there is a lack of stabilization in this, and then you see that other countries might want to leave the European Union as well, this really is precedent setting, isn't it, in terms of how this goes for what might happen to the future of the EU?
Well, you're absolutely right, because there are a number of members of the EU, for example, Austria and Italy, that's very uncomfortable with the degree of pressure exerted by the Brussels EU Commission on the individual economies of their respective countries. So people are watching very closely, because if the Brexit situation works favorably for the UK, I think the next time there's any serious crisis between EU members and the Brussels Commission, there will be a clamor for different countries to leave the EU.
Well, and certainly we see some bit of political difference and civil difference happening in the United Kingdom, similar to the United States on a number of levels. And some of that also, too, seems to be related to the ongoing religious diversity that's happening within the United Kingdom. And did that play a part in the UK's refusal to grant asylum to Asia Bibi, the Pakistani woman who was acquitted and was looking for asylum in the United Kingdom? But there's a sense in which maybe at least London and parts of England said, we don't want to offer asylum because we're afraid of alienating some of the Muslim community.
Well, that's a possible explanation, but I think there may be other behind-the-scenes reasons why Britain has refused entrance to Asia Bibi. But that yet may change, because there is a growing clamor in the UK that she should be allowed to have political asylum, because the charges against her of blasphemy are so extreme and unreasonable, and the consequences of the Pakistani court letting her free have been so serious and even fatal in Pakistan itself, that they may, the British government may feel that it's absolutely obliged to accept her.
And in terms of moving forward with some of that as well, I know that in the United States, there's been quite a bit of talk about Islamic candidates for Congress, for the Senate, and seeing some of the electoral situation there. What has it been like to see the first Islamic mayor of London in terms of any of the demographic change in London, and what do we see with that?
Well, you know, that he's a very controversial figure because he followed a very popular mayor of London, Boris Johnson, who, of course, is one of the chief Brexiteer champions and one of the most strident critics of the approach towards Brexit that Theresa May is taking. But there are other problems in London. For example, the rise of stabbing, gang warfare, and even shooting. And most of the explanation for that, as anybody who studies it closely knows, is that there are black teenage gangs who are having turf wars about the areas of the drug trafficking in London that they're allowed to control. And there's a lot of discontent with that. Also, in other cities, there are these terrible problems of grooming, where basically immigrants from Pakistan and India of Muslim background are essentially grooming children, girls who are going through the internet and Facebook and so on, and they are raping them and doing all kinds of heinous things against them. And the refusal, basically, of many of the Islamic leaders to admit that this is happening has produced quite a lot of discontent in the country.
Well, and that's part of what is driving some of the Brexit conversation, is it not, that there is an idea that if there can be a better immigration control on the borders, that their assimilation and religious diversity may be an opportunity to sort of do this a little bit more slowly and not have some of the tension involved?
Well, that's absolutely true. I mean, the UK has, on the whole, been quite gracious to immigrants or migrants, political and religious migrants coming into its shores. But what they don't want is the kind of situation they had a couple of years ago, when the European Union was basically dictating the numbers of immigrants that every European country, every member state of the EU was supposed to receive from the Middle East and Africa. And there was great discontent with that, which fueled the debate about leaving the EU altogether.
Talking with Dr. David Aikman this morning, who covers global affairs for us here on Faith Radio Mornings. And David, we'll take a short break. And there is a lot of news coming out of the Islamic and Arab world, including we see the CIA of the United States concluding that the Saudi crown prince had a significant role in the murder of the journalist Khashoggi. And I want to get into that more with you coming up next in terms of what are the implications that that has for relationship between the United States and the Middle East. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, and we are joined by Dr. David Aikman, who covered world news for Time Magazine for over 20 years and is now the editor of a new venture called Godspeed Magazine, which I highly recommend as a source for great news from a Christian standpoint. And David, there's other news headlines that came out here over the weekend and late last week, and that was that the CIA of the United States has concluded in their report that it seems quite likely the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia had a specific role in the killing of the journalist Jamal Khashoggi. What do we see in that in terms of both President Trump being a little skeptical, perhaps, of the CIA's report, as well as future relationships between the United States and Saudi Arabia?
Well, it's interesting that the State Department has not confirmed the CIA reported view, that Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince, was in fact the fellow who authorized the killing of Khashoggi. And so that's still up in the air. But I think it's interesting that in the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, you've got the ranking Democratic member, Menendez, speaking about punishing Saudi Arabia, not only for possible direct responsibility for ordering the death of Khashoggi, but for its continuing war that's very destructive of life and property in the Yemen. So I think it's going to be difficult for President Trump to ignore the clamor and the outrage, both against the murder and against the bombing in the Yemen, to resist this pressure to find some measures against Saudi Arabia.
And what options does he really have right now in terms of not alienating entirely what has been at least a somewhat stable ally in the Middle East, as well as offering punishment in the situation, because you can't confirm and support that behavior?
Well, that's right. He has very few options because he has publicly stated that this alliance with Saudi Arabia is extremely important for the United States, that there are great benefits to the American economy for having the connection with Saudi. And how do you have that position and at the same time adopt a policy that seems to punish a particular foreign leader, in this case the Crown Prince, for his alleged involvement in this murder? It's a very difficult balancing act to undertake.
In terms of some of the other global headlines, David, too, and we have a couple minutes left here, we haven't talked, you and I, about North Korea very much recently. They seem to have been out of the headlines, but some things popped up in the last week or so that maybe covertly they've continued some measure of the nuclear program in North Korea. What are we seeing with this?
Well, yes, they recently announced the deployment of a certain tactical weapon that seems to be related to their overall nuclear program. And at the same time, there have been reports emerging from the State Department and other American sources that the North Koreans have just been not implementing any concrete program to denuclearize their country. And this may lead to a real crunch time for President Trump, because he's put a lot of money on his relationship with Kim Jong-un as being able to diffuse the North Korean tension over nuclear weapons. But unless some kind of concrete timetable is brought up in the next meeting between Trump and Kim Jong-un, whenever it happens, it's going to be very difficult to continue the policy of letting North Korea off the hook, as it were.
Well, it is certainly going to be fascinating to watch over the next couple of months how he handles this situation, having opened the box diplomatically in ways that past presidents have not. David, thanks for joining us, as you do on Faith Radio Mornings. I know it's not Thanksgiving in Ireland, but if you want me to, I can probably box up some leftover turkey and send it your direction.
Ha! Yes, put it in a padded envelope and send it. I'm sure it'll get through the customs.
I love it. Have a great week, David. Look forward to chatting again next Monday.
You too. Thank you so much.
We'll take a break and wrap up our show here for the 19th of November on Faith Radio Mornings. Always so delightful to have Dr. Aikman on the program. You know, I know he's one of your favorites. And if you want to go to godspeed.magazine, you can get a subscription there for some great and trusted news coverage from a global perspective and a Christian perspective. Well, enjoy the time with you again here on a Monday for Faith Radio Mornings. I am on vacation for the rest of this week and part of next week. I'll be suffering in Disney World with my family. I certainly love it down there. And we love our time with Mickey Mouse. Paul Perreault will be taking over the program for most of the days that I'm gone. And, of course, he is very capable. And we'll have most of the usual guests. We'll be joined by Tommy Binion tomorrow from the Heritage Foundation out of Washington, D.C. Keep covering those headlines, and we look forward to a best-of program on Thanksgiving Day as well. So for all of you listening, all the believers that are walking out your faith in this country yet again today, God's best for you this week as we celebrate Thanksgiving.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.